Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome to News and Views. I'm your host, Rob Schofield. Well, it seemed like it would never get here, but the 2020 election finally took place this past week, and as seems entirely appropriate in this tumultuous year, the aftermath has been anything but quiet. While actual voting and vote counting went more smoothly than many had feared, the results were extremely close and, in many instances, not what experts had predicted. Earlier this week, I got a chance to try and decipher what happened, what it all means for North Carolina, and why so many professional observers were off in their predictions with veteran Meredith College political scientist and pollster David McLennan. As McLennan told me, one factor that many prognosticators failed to anticipate was the enthusiasm that Republicans were able to generate with last-minute rallies that often endangered public health. Well, Professor David McLennan, welcome back to News and Views. Good to have you back with us.
Good to be with you, Rob.
Well, it's been an extraordinary time as we record this. We're the day after the election, and we're still working our way through the count of the votes. We don't really know what's going to happen at the national level. We have a pretty good idea here in North Carolina. It seems as if pretty much a status quo election.
Somewhat. I mean, there's still some uncertainty around the outcome with about 117,000 absentee ballots potentially coming in before the 12th of November, but by and large, it's a kind of election we've seen before. In many ways, it looks a lot like 2016 with the Republican presidential candidate doing well in the state and a Democratic gubernatorial candidate doing well in the state. So, yeah, status quo sounds pretty accurate.
It seems as if the Democrats made a little headway. Cooper won by a larger margin in the gubernatorial race. Biden came closer to Trump than really, for instance, Barack Obama did in 2012 against Mitt Romney, certainly that Hillary Clinton did in 2016. But in the end, it just wasn't enough. And it also seems that that sort of top of the ticket number kind of filtered down through a lot of other statewide races.
Yeah, that was my impression as well. When I looked through the results early this morning, even things like judicial races, that really kind of raised my eyebrows to see how well Republicans had done in judicial races. You know, historically, or at least for the past few election cycles, Democrats have done well in the appellate level courts. Council of state races, you have some Democratic incumbents that are really being challenged by Republican challengers. And so I think you're right. I think the president did much better than the polls would have or we would have anticipated he doing because of the polls. I think he really helped other Republicans along down ballot.
Yeah, you know, I was struck by the fact that he and Senator Tillis, perhaps to a somewhat lesser extent, seemed to pretty much throw caution to the wind when it came to having large, well-attended rallies at the end. And there have been reports, indeed, strong indications this may have contributed to spreading the COVID-19 virus. And this was something that Democrats simply weren't willing to do, or perhaps wouldn't have been well received by their constituency. But as a result, it does seem that those repeated visits to North Carolina by Trump, by Vice President Pence, ended up really stimulating the base and getting out the vote big time for Trump supporters and the Republican supporters who voted, it would seem, almost sort of a straight ticket ballot.
It seems like those events were well received by the base. And again, the president 4 years ago and now this year, he is his own campaign manager and he makes those kind of decisions. And he does throw caution to the wind. The other thing that I noticed with Republicans this year is their volunteers and their field teams also were out in the community, often not following the public health officials' warnings. I mean, they were knocking on doors and going to events to encourage their voters to come out. And Democrats were not doing the same sort of things. And so I think it's a combination of the president and his team's big rallies, but also the Republicans had a good ground game going that looked a whole lot more like 2016 in terms of a ground game than you might have thought during the COVID-19 pandemic.
Yeah, and another result of this, of course, was the General Assembly, where I think most observers felt it would have been an upset for the Democrats to seize control of the General Assembly. But as it turned out, it appears they really hadn't made any progress at all, and indeed may have fallen back some, which means that it looks like we'll have the same basic makeup of the General Assembly. We'll have the same leaders at the Senate and the House, and presumably the same kind of clashes with the governor over fundamental issues like health care. And it also appears that we'll probably have more litigation, I presume, because the Republicans are in a position to once again draw the redistricting maps.
Yeah, I mean, the movie Groundhog Day sort of rings true now. It looks like many of the same things that you mentioned we've seen in the past, we'll see again. And some were hoping for at least one of the two chambers to flip and the possibility of doing some big things like Medicaid expansion. But again, that's on hold now. And the governor is going to be using his veto power quite often, I imagine. The courts are going to be heavily involved, as you said, in the redistricting cases, as well as probably sharing power kind of cases. Yeah. So, yeah, if people didn't like what we've seen over the last 2 years, they'll get used to it for perhaps the next 2 years.
Yeah, we're talking with Professor David McLennan, political science professor and pollster at Meredith College here in Raleigh. It doesn't appear ultimately that the issues that a lot of people had thought might motivate voters, things like health care, access to health care, perhaps some of the other issues, the virus itself, the tax policy, whether to reopen schools, all those things that maybe seem in some way perhaps to boost Governor Cooper's performance. And he got favorable reviews from voters on, but that didn't translate into the kind of outcomes that the Democrats would have hoped for in a lot of other races.
I think this was purely a partisan turnout election, that it was about the R's and the D's after the candidates' names, and then the respective voters made decisions to come out and support the candidates based solely on that. I mean, it is amazing how much of the advertising around all the campaigns was about health care, COVID, so on and so forth. And yet, I think you're right. It didn't seem to affect people. I mean, you could argue that the governor winning in a pretty good Republican year is a sign that his pandemic response allowed him to get some crossover votes. But, you know, the margin was still a lot smaller than people thought it was going to be. So, you know, this may simply just be a turnout election in which the side that mobilized their voters better, which in this case was Republicans, really played out the election.
I know our focus is North Carolina, but as we look at the national picture, you and I were talking before we went on the air, it seems in some ways as if sort of the model that North Carolina has been operating under these last 4 years with a Democratic governor battling a Republican legislature and having a lot of gridlock might be what we're in for at the national level. At least as we record this, it looks as if there now is a path perhaps to victory for Joe Biden. But because of the Cal Cunningham Tillis race and other races, it doesn't look as if Democrats will be able to take over the U.S. Senate. So we could be seeing a lot of litigation, a lot of gridlock in Washington going forward.
Yeah. And again, with the number of issues that at least the candidates talked about this year, health care, and I mean, there's just a whole litany of kind of issues that Washington could take up. You know, it's sort of dispiriting to think that, you know, we'll have investigations on the House side, perhaps if there is a former Trump administration. On the Senate side, they may be investigating Joe Biden. So it's just the issues are kicked down the road for at least another 4 years.
I guess I should have asked earlier, as we talked about the fact that it really did seem that just party labels dominated. I got the sense that that was the case in the Tillis-Cunningham race. Do you think, I mean, it's very rare that North Carolina actually splits its ticket between a presidential candidate of one party and a Senate candidate of the other party. In the end, did the allegations against Cal Cunningham and his extramarital romance problems, does it seem maybe it just wasn't a factor, or could it have been a partial explanation of why he ultimately seems to have come up short?
Well, I think the idea that, you know, Republicans came out and supported not only President Trump, but Tom Tillis, and Democrats did the same with their own candidates. It just didn't seem like the scandal, even though Tom Tillis made it a part of his campaign in the last few weeks. It just seemed like the numbers at the top of the ticket were reflected in the Senate race and down the ballot. So, you know, this may be a case where, you know, on the margins, had the scandal not happened, Tillis might have done a little bit better. But, you know, I'm starting to think that, you know, it wasn't a deal breaker in terms of him beating the incumbent Tillis.
And I guess the final question I have has to do with the issue of polling. And you're obviously a pollster. You'll have some thoughts on this, I'm sure, especially in the early hours of the election when it really seemed as if things were going south for Democrats at the national level. There was a lot of talk on social media and amongst Democratic activists that, you know, that pollsters had gotten it wrong again. We know that in 2016, a lot of polls had predicted that Hillary Clinton would win. We'd seen some consistent numbers showing that Joe Biden was polling well ahead of President Trump, not only nationally in the popular, general popular vote, but in a lot of these battleground states. It may well be now that Biden is going to eke out a victory, and he's clearly going to win the popular vote. But I wonder if you have any thoughts on that. There's some people who theorize that it still remains the case that Trump voters aren't as forthcoming to pollsters when they're asked about who they're going to vote for, and that maybe there's a lack of clarity there that renders our polls less accurate than they might ordinarily be in other elections.
Well, I think in terms of polling, there are some legitimate questions that are being asked. I mean, it may be the fact that the people we talk to aren't completely honest, but I think there's also another issue with sampling bias. You know, we all have to model our sample based on what we think the electorate's going to look like. And I'll be honest, I thought it was going to be a high turnout election this year, but as I thought about my model, I never anticipated that Republicans would turn out at an even higher rate than Democrats.
Yeah.
And so, you know, as we think about, you know, who we're talking to, either online or on the phone, we tried to adjust after 2016. And I think if polls are going to continue to be relevant in presidential elections in particular, we have got to figure out a better way of getting the right people to answer the questions, even knowing that some people are going to maybe not be honest with us at all times. So I think the polling industry is going to do another very serious series of self-reflections over the next couple of months. And again, it's journalists like yourself and others that are going to be asking questions the next election cycle. Are we going to be so dependent on polling?
Well, for your sake and for all of our sake, and I think the well-being of our democracy, I very much hope that we continue to improve on our polling. I hope that y'all come to some conclusions about ways we can continue to improve the accuracy and that they continue to be an important part of our political process going forward. It's always a delight to talk to you. Thank you for your insights. I hope you get a chance to get some rest here in the days and weeks ahead, and that the next time we talk, we'll be talking about 2021 and the politics of that year.
Well, thanks, Rob. It's always great to talk with you, and I hope you get some rest as well.
Coming up next, a trio of Duke University scholars shared their insights on what the election results tell us. Don't go away.